You're listening to the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, the show about all things design, from the creative side to the business side and all points in between. Follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell. Want the gang to answer your question on an upcoming episode? Send in your listener question to questions@thedeependesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. Here are your hosts.
Wes McDowell in Chicago.
Mikhail Morrison in Salt Lake.
Nick Longo in Los Angeles.
All right. Thanks for coming back, guys. And thank you all for continuing to listen, leaving us the 5-star reviews. We count on it. We love it. And we love you when you do it. So keep doing it so we can love you. We want to have a love.
We have a lot of love to offer.
We do.
It's a love situation.
It's a real love fest here. So it's not even Valentine's Day. But what are you kids up to these days? What's going on? What's new?
Yeah. This morning, I set my alarm really early, and I got my coffee, and I put in a good hour, and then Oakley woke up, and I thought, you know, let's get the hell out of here. So we just left and walked around the store for way too long.
A little break.
And a couple of ideas for upcoming projects came to me. Maybe it's about leaving the scene every so often. I mean,
I know.
You got to.
You know when you have that feeling and you're just not feeling productive and you know you need to either go to bed, have another drink, or just step away altogether?
One of the three.
I like to combine the first two. I like to drink and then go to bed and then wake up with a massive
great
headache,
idea.
Ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah. But why those not? Ideas just keep coming and coming.
Exactly.
I know. I feel like I'm working in shifts lately. I think that's kind of how it's been feeling lately. It's like it's been coming home with me. It's working on the weekends. It's I asked for it. You know, it's like it's been a tough few weeks. But like, man, it was all about just getting out there and kind of reconnecting with a lot of clients I hadn't heard from in a while and some going after some new ones. So it did kind of kick into gear. But it's like I need a little time off. I think we're all kind of feeling that, you know?
Yeah, I need the work-life balance. Well, I thought of you last night, Mikhail. I was I saw Book of Mormon for the first time, so it's a lot of Salt Lake City references in that.
Yeah. I still haven't seen it. Did you think it was an absolute kick?
It's great. I'm a total theater nerd too, so I can't believe it's taken me this long to see it. I feel kind of ashamed of myself, but it's in Chicago, and I just wanted to get good tickets, but my friends are like, we don't really want to spend money.
Hey.
So I'm like, okay, let's. We did the ticket lottery. I don't know if anyone listening like has experienced this, but you go to the theater ahead of time, you put in your name, and then they draw like 10 names to get like really cheap front row tickets. Of course, none of us got picked. So we get like the remnant seats. Literally me and my friend, there was like six of us.
Split,
so we're all
were
scattered.
You split apart?
Yeah, a little bit. I was sitting with one of my friends.
Okay.
Literally the back row of the balcony.
Wow.
Like we had like God's view, like looking down on the stage. So, but anyway, anyone who is listening who has not seen it, it's hilarious. So it's worth a shot.
Yeah, I saw it in New York a year or two ago. And I don't know what I think it was my hype. I was expecting it to go even more over the line. And I just because of knowing about who made it and everyone was talking about it so much. So I was expecting this, like it was going to go so far over the line.
Depending on where they're performing, you wouldn't think that would be the case.
I think it's just cast and crew really changes. I mean,
yeah,
they're pretty much to the T, probably the same thing. I liked how they did bring in a lot of the current, they ad lib a lot and bring in a lot of current affair and things that are happening at the moment into each night, which is kind of funny.
I don't
that
think I noticed any of that, but yeah, we definitely had a lot of walkouts. A lot of the blue hairs who love to go to the theater, they were not quite taken with halfway through the first act when it was like a song about F you God. So they're like, I don't think we signed up for this.
That would have posed some shocking entertainment. Just for the record, listeners, Wes mentioned he was thinking of me when he saw it, not because I'm Mormon, but because I'm surrounded by them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
I love how she
not
stuck
that I have anything against LDS. Oh my gosh, some of the nicest people we've met here, honestly.
Yeah.
And without there being any motive to convert, they are some of the nicest people we will ever meet, probably in our whole life.
That's cool. True. And you know, one of the nicest accounting software programs you'll ever find is FreshBooks, baby.
That's also very true.
Yeah, we love FreshBooks. Basically, because we're designers, we're not accountants. We don't want to get involved in writing invoices and formatting invoices. Who needs that headache?
Numbers. So anyway,
yeah, numbers are not our game, man. We are designers. So, but basically, FreshBooks makes it super easy to create the invoices, brand them so they look like they're from your company, send them out, even send reminders. So you're always sure to get paid, and you can always see when your client has viewed the invoice. So there's no kind of question about it. Mm-hmm. And you've been using it for a while, right, Nick? Longer than we have.
I'd say almost 2.5 to 3 years now. Yeah.
Oh.
Best 3 years of your life.
I tell you, without a glitch, no issues at all. And like I think I said last time, but sometimes you think you caught a mistake and you're like, oh, it was me. It's like, that's how good it keeps track of everything you have. And the nice thing about it too is think of every invoice you use or set up is an invoice for a future one. So if you have done one that is a whole logo package, that is your template that you can use for the next one. So you're not redoing it over and over and over again. You know, there's so many good advantages to the way it's set up being on the cloud.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What I like too is the new feature. I don't even know if it's new, but I recently discovered that you can ask for a deposit. So you make one invoice. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do separate invoices for like the upfront deposit.
Yeah.
Right. And then it will record that the deposit's been paid when you, it's just really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So it also keeps track of your expenses for tax time. And the mobile app lets you take pictures of your receipts and it stores them for later for when you're doing your taxes. And we've worked out a deal. If you guys have not done this yet, come on, get with the program.
You should be there by now.
Yeah. We have 1 month free for our listeners. You don't even need a credit card to set up, to sign up. So you're going to go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and then enter Deeply Graphic in the How You Heard About Us section. So freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic. Check them out. All right, cool. So on with the show. We decided to do an episode about, because a lot of times, I think a lot of our listeners, a lot of you guys listening, probably work in relative isolation. You're freelancers, you get a project, and it's kind of just you running it, you designing. But what happens, like, you know, if you've been designing it and then you show it to your client and they're not feeling it for whatever reason, that something went wrong along the way. And we're going to talk all about how to reality check your freelance design projects along the way so that, you know, you're always keeping the objectives in mind and you're getting extra eyeballs on it. So, you know, you're on the right track.
Yeah. It's one of the first things I think we all lose sight of with timing, working on your own, juggling, going from one client to the next. So hopefully this will be a really good conversation to kind of get you back on track with that, because I think everyone gets there. You just got to have a little bit of knowledge and some tips to know where to go and what to do along the way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, things can go off track when you're working alone for an extended period of time. Like a lot of times you'll lose sight of the original goals because you're working on it and you're refining it and you're just looking at it. It's kind of like an endless feedback loop in your own head. So you'll see something and like, oh, I might like this better. And then that morphs into something else. And before you know it, you've forgotten what the original goal
project scope was. Yeah.
Yeah, that can happen. It used to happen to me quite a bit, you know, when I was newer. So we're going to talk about some tactics, I guess, to kind of help you guys out. So the first one sounds kind of obvious, but I think people really miss it, is keep the design brief handy throughout the project. Always keep it there. Mm-hmm. What I would recommend is highlight some of the key phrases within it and tack it up on your bulletin board. Put it up on the wall. Make sure that you're always keeping those major bullet points in mind throughout the entire design process.
Yeah. And that's not only for you, but like, I like having that up on the wall so when a client sees maybe round one of something and they start questioning it, I can look right there and be like, well, we did agree on this. And hopefully, you know, your work reflects that. But it's also a great checkpoint at that point.
For them.
Because I'm dealing with about two or three issues with that right now where it's like, we said this, guys, so changing it you know, puts us not only off timing, but off budget. So, you know, these are all those things I think we need to, like, first look at ourselves and say, am I on track before you even show anything? But this tactic works so many different phases of the project, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, like, once you have it on the wall and you're kind of checking everything against it all the time, you'll really start to, like, internalize all those concepts.
Without even thinking now. Yeah.
Right. Because it's you're always looking at it. That way you're never going to forget what the goals are because they're there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us tend to just keep these things digitally on our computers. And I'm all for saving the trees for sure. But this is where a printer does come in handy. Like, I do recommend printing it out the old fashioned way and just kind of having a hard copy. Because if it's just in a Google Doc somewhere or on a PDF in your computer, it's going to be harder to check against it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and having that visual reminder, gosh, that makes such a difference for me nowadays because it's so easy. I think we're so as creatives, I think we look at influence and inspiration everywhere. So it's very easy to go off track because let's say you were supposed to stick in this zone for something, but around you is something totally different, right?
Yeah, you get inspired somewhere.
Yeah, or you see something really quick on a blog or something you've seen or noticed and made a bookmark of, and it's so easy to get on to that bandwagon because it just was something so cool. But, man, totally better to stay on track with what you agreed on. I think it goes in line with everything we've talked about when we were doing that discovery, you know, because you got that sign off, so let's go that way and that way only. And it saves time. You might be a little quicker now because you're so much more focused, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're not spending 6 hours. You're maybe doing it in 3.5.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're not saying, by the way, like, not to check what you're doing against other stuff because that actually is one of my points.
Yeah.
But if you get inspired outside of the original scope a little bit, that's okay, but you have to check it against the brief and check it against the original goals. Make sure it's not detracting, but it's adding to it.
Yeah.
Because, the next thing I was going to bring up is, you know, go turn to other sources. Like, once you've got something on paper, once you've got something designed, look at what other people are doing. I mean, you should do that to begin with, but once you've kind of got a sense of what you're doing, look at other sources, see what is working for other people and how yours measures up to it. If we're talking about a website, you know, you should have done this homework in the beginning, not saying not to do that, but once you've got, like, let's say the homepage designed, check it against other ones. Make sure, like, the usability is on par or better than the other people, you know, the other competition is using. And if it's not on par, if it's less than, ask yourself why. What's working here on this site that's not working on yours?
Yeah.
You know?
I tend to take that to an even more visual experiment. If it's a package design or a logo design, it makes it a little, and you can do it with web design as well. You stack it up against competitive people that were even on the list or maybe something you talked about with the client at the very beginning. And I've even gone to the part of, I have about 20 or so shots I've taken within different retail, you know, grocery, electronic, and drop that package on shelves just to see for myself, does this work? Does this stand out? And it allows you to kind of measure up how you did.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's even a better example than mine because, it's hard to design in the beginning thinking, okay, I'm going to make this stand out against everything else. You're going to do what you're going to do.
Sure,
and then you have to see, does it hold up? Does it stand up to the competition?
And
you know?
You're right. And I like too, sometimes it what I think might be a departure or something too off, it proves to be a good design solution when something is that different because those are the brands. I really encourage my clients not to copy another brand. You don't want to look like your competitor. You want to measure up and you want to look like you're part of the party, but you don't want to blend in as well. Yeah. So
competing for attention, particularly on a shelf like that.
Yeah. I think this brings up a really good thing that we all are probably trying to do a lot more of too, is think objectively with our own work. That is like I think that's like the toughest thing for any designer to do, you know? And yeah. all these steps, I think, include that. And it's so, it, don't you find that to be one of the hardest things to actually dissect and look at your work and like critique it?
Yeah, that yeah. only ever really happens the next day after you've been away.
You've got to step away.
And,
right.
and having that very first glance and knowing your very first initial reaction without mm-hmm. without even thinking about how long you spent on it the day prior, whatever
it's very true. Yeah. I, you know what I did the other day, and I think this came up into a conversation that I had when we were working on some branding, but I printed everything out minutes before leaving the office, put it on the wall. And when I came in the next day, I looked at it just like you said, Mikkel, and kind of went, oh my God, that option B, no way. Like it just didn't, like it didn't even fit because I saw it with those fresh eyes. I would have never seen that kind of the day before because you are so in it, you know?
Yeah.
Happens to me a lot when I'm designing logos because I'll have mm-hmm. so many concepts and yep. I'll think they're all working. And then, yeah, the next day I'll come back to it and I'm like, okay, A and C are completely out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just got to whittle them down from there. So, yeah step away from it for a day.
It's definitely tough to do that. But I think you nailed it by breaking away from it and then coming back. But try, you know, I've showed this with my students a lot. They can do this we always take it on the next day and kind of revisit something. But if you can really look at your own work and kind of nitpick all the things that maybe it's line spacing, maybe it's letter spacing, maybe it's, are the colors in harmony, you know, how does that work in different sizes and different ratios and look at it that way. Now you're automatically kind of being objective and you're putting the rules, those things that we all know as designers, into the design you're looking at. So you can kind of question it, even if it's your own, you know, it's still tough. I think we all battle with it, but the more you can, I think you weed out a lot of the stuff that will just be confusing to the client.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you do get better at it over time too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard at first to be objective about your own stuff, but.
Oh God.
Yeah. I once heard, someone had a quote, I don't remember who it was, but they basically said, like, never look at your own work just to admire it. Like, look at it with a very critical eye. Like, always look at it and say, what can I do better?
Mm-hmm.
Versus, like, ain't I great?
Well, a good example of is, I found an old portfolio of, like, package design I did about 10 years ago. Oh, my God. So there's your that time really makes the difference when it comes to looking at things objectively.
Oh, yeah.
Because I looked at every font choice and oh, my God. It was like, what were we thinking?
Yeah.
You know,
my favorite go-to fonts 10 years ago were like so laughable now.
Oh, God. Even last year, they're kind of laughable.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's so time is the key with that. And try to, I think another point is to make sure whatever design you're doing stands the test of time. You know, we're seeing companies refresh so quickly now that,
Netflix is the latest one now.
I know. And, you know, DC Comics did it again after just in 3 years, which was unbelievable. We could talk later probably about MasterCard. I don't know if you guys saw the new MasterCard logo that came out today.
No. Came out
interesting.
Today.
Yeah, take a look. We could chat. It's kind of difficult to look at that. And then here we are trying to get whatever X amount our logo design is for a client. And these companies are resorting to this kind of stuff. It's like it makes it so much harder for us to be creative designers when this is the benchmark. I just don't get it.
I mean, it kind of makes our jobs easier, though. It's like, hey, MasterCard.
You're right. But then... Will a client think that if it's that much easier in design, should it be that much lower in price? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because like,
no, it's yeah. The companies that charge like millions of dollars for a logo. It's you know, my brain keeps going back to that London Olympics from like, what was it? 2012. Mm-hmm. That was just horrific looking. Like, looked like an aneurysm on paper.
But don't forget there are levels and levels of other work beyond just the logo. There is a Bible that is made that is the usage, the graphics, the patterns, like it or not, you can't just say that they got $100,000 for like the logo, right? It's everything else that they did in addition to that. Now this MasterCard shows some really nice assets that they did that are beyond the logo, and I'm sure we're included with that price too. But when you just look at the logo design, I don't, it's like, come on, that's 10 minutes. That is literally 10 minutes.
Yeah. Max. They took what they already had and just simplified it so much, which I love simple.
But, I do too. But wouldn't you think $100,000 plus would get you something that's not following trends, that actually might set a trend?
Yeah.
Come on. I don't know. It really bothers me when I see that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Look at Mikkel. Mikkel's still in shock. She's just like, if I ever showed that to a client, I would be laughed and hung up on. I'm just so curious
yeah. about the iterations prior to this final.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just goes to show you when you've made it, like what you said, this is a really top-notch firm that did
There's no one bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that buys you a lot of cachet, and I think you can do what you want at that point.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of people
it's an interesting psychological thing that way.
It is. You know, as for such a resource and such a price tag, I would think you would dig a little deeper into that. And it just, to me, it's going against everything. One, like I try to teach. Two, we try to do. Three, we try to strive for, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't see no challenge in that. I just don't. And so I don't know.
So with Netflix, it's a new icon. They haven't altered their logo,
It's something in addition. Yeah. It's the N as a standalone. Yeah.
Right.
I see.
Kind of in a ribbon pattern, which it seems neither here nor there to me. I feel like all my icons on my iPhone are just changing now for no reason.
I know. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to sound like the angry designer guy, but none of them seem to make any improvement.
Yeah, that is just so interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, so the next thing we're going to talk about is, something it feels a little touchy-feely. I think a lot of people out there aren't really doing it. Marketers have been doing this for years, and it's making customer personas. So, and if you design for these personas and you really put your mind inside of the mind of them, I think you're going to find that you're always designing with the right in the right frame of mind. So what I like to do now, I didn't used to do this with my clients, but during the discovery process, one of the meetings is all about kind of defining their customers. Because as we know, we're not designing anything for our customers. We're designing them for their customers. So, and that's something you really have to educate your client about too. And I think most people with any kind of business sense already know that. It's your smaller clients that are going to need to be talked into that, because the smaller the client is, the more they make the mistake of thinking they have to love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So what I like to do is we go through a whole exercise where I ask them all these questions about their client base, who they are. And then with that information, I come up with, one or two customer personas. That we're going to design everything with that person in mind. So when you're doing a persona, we're not even talking about just specific types of people. You're trying to make like an amalgamation of all the people that are their number one customer.
Mm-hmm.
Give that person a name, give them a job, age, hobbies, all that stuff, and write it all down. Make this person like, and even get a photo to put with it. So you're designing everything for, Sally, and as opposed to customer segment X, because, what's that principle? It's got a name where it says basically 80% of your effort is going to come from 20%. No, 80% of your gains are going to come from 20% of your effort.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you can design for everybody if you want to. But you're watering down your message when you do that. So
yeah, so you're sticking to the main target and identifying who they are. Mm-hmm. I love the idea. Like I've seen agencies use that method before, where they actually do have the pictures of someone who would be that, and it gives you a better kind of connection to that person when you're designing for them, right?
Yeah. And I do that now with discovery, and then when I do the presentation, the proposal presentation, I have these fully fleshed out personas, and that's very impressive to my clients, because they're like, wow, this guy, they took the time to really dig deep into who we have to appeal to. And the great thing about this is you're taking them, the client, out of the equation a little bit.
Yeah.
And letting them make decisions that, because now whenever they say they don't like something, they don't like a color,
they gotta back it up, man.
You can say, but does Sally like it?
Yeah.
What does this person think of it? And the more they, it's a little bit of a training exercise. Mm-hmm. If they don't already get the benefits, they kind of will the more you hit it over the head. So
I love that.
Yeah. So the reason we're talking about
personas, isn't it so funny when you're working with marketing management and they say, oh, the VP is going to love this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what? What?
Yeah.
Why did you just say that? That totally is off point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
VP doesn't
she better love
like
it because
it.
She better love it because Sally loves it.
Yep.
You know, it's
exactly.
True. You're right. I think we think they're doing us a favor and telling us that the superiors are going to love something because it's right up their alley. Mm-hmm. We're not. It's Sally's alley. Get it?
Yeah.
That sounds a little. No.
Sally's, yeah.
Yeah. But
back that one up,
Nick. You bring up a great point because we get into this situation a lot where the questions are asked and no one can make up their mind. And we talked about this with, I think, a few other podcasts where it makes so much sense to design for the consumer and who that target customer is. And if you can nail it to someone, that individual, then they can think a little bit easier and say, oh, we've already been Wes educated me on who this girl is and what she thinks and likes and her hobbies are. So let's design around that.
Yeah. And it lets your client be much more, because we just talked about us being objective, looking at our work. Mm-hmm. That allows the client to be objective too. So that their own personal taste will always factor in a little bit, but you know, the more they kind of wrap their head around the idea that it's not important what they think, it's important what Sally thinks. And so if we have these personas, it'll be your job to come up with them unless your client already has these personas. Yeah.
I used to do support for this brand strategist group. Mm-hmm. They were all brand strategists, and there were maybe 20 of them that I can remember. And what they did was they traveled around the world and they did interviews based on the brands they were studying and put personas.
Sign me up.
No doubt, right?
God,
like,
what a
oh,
job.
We went clubbing in London last night because
for
we were
work.
Studying. We were studying how Corona is drank amongst that demographic.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's a little fishy to me, but I like. I want that job.
Just fascinating.
I still
so
want it.
They would do all the homework, put it in terms, and then I would have to bring visuals to those terms.
Mm-hmm.
They did all of that crazy homework, and I just had to bring it to life with respect to graphic illustration. So
mm-hmm.
It just depends on who you're working with, but and this is also making me think that if you're not just putting creative concepts to what's already been determined by the client, you need to up the ante with respect to mm-hmm. number of hours part of this project scope to account for those personas and that study mm-hmm. time and that research and mm-hmm. putting together the silhouettes or however you want to illustrate this to indicate those personas.
Yeah,
that's time and money.
Yeah, and don't look at that as any kind of like upsell on your part to where you shouldn't be charging for that, because without knowing that, you're kind of just taking stabs in the dark anyway. So that,
right.
that's a really important piece of the puzzle, actually, is having those personas. So make it clear to your clients up front that that's something you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I have started doing it, I can't imagine going back and not doing it anymore, because everything was kind of more superficial without it.
Yeah. And I think you said too a while back with adding all this discovery at the beginning
mm-hmm.
does weed out some of those ones that just either weren't at the budget already or don't understand your contribution. And
mm-hmm.
that's a good thing. Get the ones that do appreciate this and will pay for that, because really, God, think of everything we're talking about here. This answers a lot of the questions we get about how do I expand my business? How do I take it to the next level? You are more than a designer, guys. You could do this stuff. This is the stuff, you know, how many articles have you seen where it's like, is this the end of the advertising agencies? Or because the design agencies are kind of being able to do both. So let's be many versions of those. Let's up our services by doing this.
Yeah, because I mean, almost anybody can design. Like, not everyone can. That's gonna incite a riot when I say that. But you know, we all have a taste. We can all, and the software is certainly there. Not everyone has the best taste, but the way there are enough designers, that's why I think our price point kind of gets taken down a notch. But when you can start providing measurable kind of value, ROI to your clients with this kind of thing, then you can charge more and you'll get a better class of client. And the better clients with bigger budgets tend to not have as many interfering opinions, I found too.
You're right.
You know?
You're right. They let you lead and follow with you along the way. The ones that kind of put up the roadblocks and the obstacles, chances are I can look back at those and go, the signs were there. You know?
Because the ones with no money, especially I'm thinking of the startups that are just someone with using their own MasterCard, speaking of MasterCard again, to finance the operation, they are going to like put everything you do under such a fine-tooth comb or under a microscope because they're paying
every penny. Every penny. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. So we've talked about that before, but totally. You know, so get these personas set up, and just design everything you do with that person in mind. And always, every decision you come back to, consult the brief and look at that little, I recommend again, making a hard copy of, put this person's picture up there with the name, hobbies, everything, age, how tech savvy are they?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a website, like, can you get away with certain functionalities?
Nice.
Or are they a different kind of demographic that you have to do things in a different way?
That's a great point. Yeah. I bet you that has eliminated so many crazy back and forths because you just ask, is she this tech savvy to do it in the first place? Does that feature on the site even have a meaning?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a great example is like now we're starting to see more and more the little hamburger menu on websites, you know, the hidden menu.
Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself, is the demographic older or younger? The younger demographic tends to understand that icon a little bit more.
Yeah.
So you can get I'm not saying you always should use it anyway, but that's a topic for a different Oprah. But then, you know, if you can get away with it, then it's on the table. But if it's for an older demographic who has no idea what that icon even means, for the most part, then it's not even, you know, worth a discussion. So
question for you, when you are building a persona like that and the question comes up, how tech savvy is our girl or a guy? Do you have any insight as to where you're finding the answers to some of these questions? If it's something that seems a little like, ooh, that could go either way.
Yeah. Okay. So sometimes if you've got analytics, like if it's an existing site, you can absolutely look through and you can see certain demographics that are indicators, like what kind of browser they're on. You know,
nice. Okay.
Usually
that tells you a lot.
If they're on kind of an older browser, that kind of tells you they're a little less tech savvy. Yeah.
they're on web TV.
Yeah. Like what kind of screen resolution, things like that are little indicators. But a lot of times if it's a new site, you really have to kind of use your imagination. You really have to kind of get in the headspace of this person. And a lot of times it is a bit of a stab in the dark, but it has to be coming from an educated guess kind of place.
At least you're adding this level to the whole mix rather than leaving it out. It can only help. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's better to do, even if it's a kind of an educated guess, it's better than not doing it at all. All right, cool. So the next thing that we want to talk about is, so you've kind of done as much as you can do on your own. You've consulted the brief, you've put yourself inside the head of the persona. But what if you want to get other people's opinions? Because sometimes it kind of comes to that. So you can host a casual focus group at your place. Get some friends together. Get some family together. It doesn't have to be all about come over to test this website or take a look at this brochure or whatever. Just have them over for any old reason. Netflix binge, party, anything, just a get together. And while they're there, just take a few minutes and have people kind of check it out in real time. I'm going to come at it from a place of web design because I think this makes the most sense in this case. But Nick, you chime in. chime in with your print stuff for Mikkel. So basically, let's say you're working on a website, and you know this can go one of two ways. Maybe you have a working prototype at this point, or maybe you just have some PSDs. Either way, so if it's a working prototype, if it's been developed somewhat, look over their shoulder and ask them to use the site. Mm-hmm. First thing you're going to want to do, have them look at it for about 5 seconds, and then pull it away and say, what was that about? What's the product or service being offered? If they can't tell you definitively, then there's more work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Back to the drawing board.
That's the first thing, because if you can't convey what the product or service is immediately, then that's a really bad sign.
Oh, dude, that works in every line of what we do. I think that's a great test. You know?
And there's actually a website. I just thought about that. I just remember
First impressions.
It's called
like that.
I want to say it's called like 3secondtest.com or something like that.
Interesting. Okay.
Where you literally upload a screen capture and users will go on and they'll flash it for a few seconds, and then people have to type in what they think it is.
Smart. That's
and then
really
you get all
good.
That feedback. Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah. So, you know, you can do that online, or you can do it with your friends. And, you know, the other thing to do after that, have them use the site for a little bit. Have them and ask them questions as they're doing it. Yeah. And have them kind of describe their thought process as they're doing it as well. And if you don't have a workable prototype, if it's just PSD files, have them kind of scroll down the page and have them tell you what they would click on if they were on the site and what they would expect to find.
Yeah.
You know, what they would expect to happen once they did click on it, to see if it goes along with what you were envisioning. You know, because sometimes as designers, we work on a different wavelength and we forget that there are real users out there who may not kind of get what it is you're going for.
Yeah. Yeah. I love having another set of eyes on things. And I've seen a huge difference in now having two people with me on a daily basis. What a difference that makes to have some extra eyes on stuff. I call one of my guys, Steven. He's like my spell check for design. You know, spell check before you send an email off. It's like he catches little things, or even vice versa, when we're all working together and everyone's working on the same project and we can put some concepts up. I can grab a little nugget of like, wow, I love what you did there. And then we love here. And like, how do we combine these two and Matt now take the best two things we saw and put it into one option? But even just catching those little things like line spacing, or letter spacing in a logo, I'm sure Mikkel's nodding her head. She knows exactly what I'm talking about. The colors, you might love a color combination, but somebody else will look at it and be like, that reminds me of, and you're like, I didn't even think of that.
It wouldn't have occurred to you.
Of course, because you're so glued in to that concept because you designed it. And you're sometimes the influence isn't even that that apparent to you, and you're copying something almost without knowing. I had one option was on the board the other day, and luckily a colleague before the client saw it and said, the W looks way too much like the old retro Wilson sports, you know, Wilson tennis balls and all that, the logo. And I didn't even see that. And it was such a great call out that I was so glad somebody saw that. And here I was, it went from my favorite idea to like, okay, that could go in the libraries now for maybe something down the road.
Yeah.
You know, but all in all, it's so good to have that. And if you don't have that person, like you said, Wes, have people just that you trust or even other designers you might know kind of be a part of that and see it. Again, too, anything you post on Instagram, a lot of times I've been seeing designers posting things with the options on there and getting people to chime in and say, help me out here. Option 1 to 6. What do you think? What do you see when these come on? And people, you get the best part of, you know, that whole thing we say, like people are not afraid to say anything on the internet because it's kind of faceless a little. Yeah. So, hey, I'll take your constructive criticism if it's going
to
help
me. It's like they're eager to participate. It's really interesting.
I love when you post a final one and you get someone giving you revisions. I'm like, I wasn't asking for it.
Yeah,
I know.
That's one of my favorites. But
some people just can't help it.
But be clear. Put it out there and say, give me some heads up here. What do you think? Ask for it.
Yeah. And ask the people who you know are going to be honest with you, because there's always going to be people. Like, if you ask your mom, she's always going to be like, oh, it's great. I love it. Don't change a thing. But not necessarily the most valid
opinion.
Oh, I
get from Betty, I constantly get, what is it?
Well, that was a good impersonation. Yeah. I've never met her.
I've never met Betty, but she sounds like a delight.
Or she'll think
that at least your mom's listening to the podcast.
It's supposed to be haha funny, and she'll just say, "I don't get it." Like she's completely missing something. There's nothing to get, Mom. It's a logo. I'm just sharing with you anyway. So
I like the old MasterCard logo.
Yeah.
The other thing about if you don't have time for rounding up a quick casual focus group, and oftentimes we don't. Mm-hmm. We need feedback in a hurry. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I've got three separate Slack accounts up running every single day. And amongst them, one is for my company and others are supporting other companies. And I know those other companies have designers in-house. I've asked to be linked with them.
Ah, good idea.
And there's no reason that you can't just throw a screen capture up there and get some quick feedback from somebody. Mm-hmm. And then what's awesome is that there can be a trade that happens between you and who, and you know, one other, two others, three others. It can be really beneficial.
Yeah. And there are like public Slack channels, right? For designers.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great option.
Behance has Facebook. A work in progress.
Oh, they do?
So if you post something,
there's
two options. It goes, do you want to post it to your portfolio or to a work in progress? And do the work in progress because people will do look at that on a daily basis to kind of chime in. And you can put stuff very rough and in development, which is cool. So if you're not around people.
There's a convenience with sending visuals to those that are insiders with the company and understand the brand.
Yeah.
But there's also benefits to showing to just random people of the public and asking if they need it to be spelled out for them. Because if they do, then you may find that you're off on the wrong track.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So a few other places would be, you know, Facebook groups, LinkedIn design groups.
LinkedIn groups. Yep.
Yeah. Those are great places to get some opinions.
Have you seen some of there was this one that was on for months on LinkedIn and it was like, I hate to say it, they were the worst logo concepts I've ever seen. And this guy had like a million like votes and comments.
Oh,
I was like,
no.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm like, I can't get 15 people to comment on something on LinkedIn. Yeah. I don't get that world.
Helps to have lots of connections on there, I guess.
I guess there's something about it went viral. It had to. I don't. Who knows?
Maybe because they were so bad.
Could be.
It might have been like the William Hung of LinkedIn design.
let's think it was that and feel a lot better.
All right. So now is like this one is kind of the. I feel like it's the most needed, the most necessary. What I recommend highly is scheduling. So once you kick off a project, you're going to tell your client, we're meeting every week at this time on this day. Come up with a day and time that works. I know for me, I like to schedule all my meetings on, you know, Friday afternoons and just have just kind of roll them one after another. But whatever works for your client, it has to work for them too. So you're going to tell them, we're going to meet every week. This is going to keep us on track. This way we can talk about things that are upcoming, things that are completed, things that are roadblocks, all that good stuff. And just make sure they are on board to treat it as a priority.
Yes.
And you have to be diplomatic about that. But, you know, just tell them, like, I know there's going to be a lot of times when it's going to seem like something else is coming up that's more important. But trust me, this is important because you've hired me to do this job and you want it to be done on time and this is the only way to do it. So the cool thing about having these client meetings is you can show stuff in progress and never get too far off track.
Yeah.
You know,
because you're adding checkpoints kind of.
Yeah. You're showing in stages.
Yeah.
It's like one of my web design projects right now, for instance, like, you know, once I had the homepage design, I presented that to him in real time on one of our Friday meetings. Mm-hmm. Then the next week, I got a sign off from it because we talked about it. Luckily, he actually liked everything, but had he not liked everything, I would have heard that in his voice. Like, yeah. A lot of times when you just email something, you're waiting with bated breath, like, oh my God, they hate it. But if you're presenting it in real time, you can always kind of tell if they're responding to it favorably or not. You know?
It's those little clues you're getting, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you can address anything in real time. Like, either you defend it and tell them why you did it, or maybe if it was just a design decision that can be changed and you can tell they're not, it's not going the way you want, you talk about it. And that way you never get too far off course. The worst thing you can do is design a whole website or a whole anything, start to finish, completely on the wrong
track. Without anything. Yeah. Hello, 18 hours gone. Or however. Exactly.
In the case of a website, I mean, way more than that.
Oh, God. So, yeah.
I mean, and obviously you should always be showing things in stages anyway. Mm-hmm. But once you break it down week by week, now you're never going to get too crazy, you know?
Right.
And I also, as an aside, I highly recommend presenting everything like that. If it's not, I don't mean in person. I just mean like over a screen share or something.
And part of a discussion that's live, I love to start bringing that into play a little bit more, even when it's just as simple as branding, because I think it gives you a better, God, it's such a better opportunity, like you said, one, to not just keep the process moving along, but with each step, I think you're fine-tuning it probably so much better than you would if it was just over email and here's everything, comment on your own, and I'm not there to kind of guide a little bit, right? Sounds like that's what you can do, and you can kind of...
Oh, yeah, you'd be amazed how you can kind of talk them into stuff, and that sounds like... you're trying to pull one over on them. I don't mean it like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, ideally you should have been designing kind of with a purpose in mind. And you can, what I like to do is I take them through everything. And I said, I did this here because of this.
And why,
And some things are always going to be a little arbitrary and just pure design decisions. Mm-hmm. But if that comes up, you say, if you had a reason for it, you say what that is. If not, and you think that their opinion is a good one, that will, you know, take the project in a good direction, note it down. If you think their opinion is going to take it in a bad direction, tell them why.
Yeah.
You know, it helps to just have those conversations rather than have them via email. So I'm now a believer in never presenting a proposal in an email and never presenting concepts in an email. Present it in real time.
It's a good point. I was thinking of, as you were saying that, the whole proposal side and estimate side and the first stage, why not do it live too? It just gives you a better chance to explain your whole style of working. And I think if they're making a big investment on this with you and you're new, why not give them more, you know, to say, I like this guy or girl. They get it. You're getting a great opportunity to do that.
They're putting in the time because almost everybody else you're going to compete against is just going to email in a proposal. You know,
it's just like interviewing. It's just like interviewing for a job. I mean, you wouldn't do it all over email and phone. You go. Right. You actually meet and you get personality. You get a good vibe.
Yeah.
Why not give you an extra chance to show off a little bit more? You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of our best bet scenario for reality checking your projects midway through and all the way through every step of the way. So you'll never get, you know, too far off course, and your clients will always be in the loop and, you know, keeps things moving along very smoothly. So
totally.
And speaking of smoothly, we got Green Geeks web hosting. So web hosting obviously isn't one of those things that is super exciting or sexy or anything like that, but it's necessary. We all have a portfolio website, and some of us have clients who have websites as well. So all you can really ask for is a host that makes things easy on you, and you don't really have to think about it too much. Green Geeks is amazing. Unlimited space and data transfer, free domain name registration or transfer. And the best thing ever is it's just 24/7, 365 US-based support. There's nothing worse than a web host company that you email them with a problem and they just send you back the nerdiest answer ever, like expecting you to be the IT guy of the company.
Nice.
That's not what Green Geeks is about. Oh God, that I used to hate that so much. So they've got like kind of the best thing of like, because GoDaddy has good support. Like you can call them and talk to them, but GoDaddy kind of sucks other than that.
Yeah.
So Green Geeks is a good, like it's actually a good web hosting company with all the best parts of that. So they'll migrate your site for you for free. You can't beat that. So, and they have reseller hosting. You can white label hosting for your clients, make some extra money there. Reseller plans start at $19.95 a month, and individual plans start at just $3.96 a month. That's pretty good. And we can make it even better for you. With 20% off your first billing cycle, just go to thedeependdesign.com/hosting and use the promo code TAKE20OFF. So again, you're not going to go right to their website. You're going to go to thedeependdesign.com/hosting and use the promo code TAKE20OFF. All right. We got a listener question, don't we?
All right,
as usual.
Yes, we do.
All right, so today's question comes to us from Dewey Entrekin. Mikkel, you want to read this one?
Dewey writes, "Longtime listener, I'll be straight to the point. I know that I want to own my own studio, keep it relatively small. I've got all the infrastructure in place, such as equipment, website, social media, Chamber of Commerce membership, stationery, etc. But I've always let my fears keep me in the relative safety of full-time employment. I've been in a new job for the last year and have fell in love with the work of a coworker of mine, and we've hit it off professionally. We both want to push the business forward. How do you all face the fear of going out on your own and take the plunge? Any advice?"
Yeah. So this one's a little interesting because he wants to go out with someone else.
Somebody else,
cool.
Yeah.
Like a partnership, yeah.
Strength in
and
numbers,
I love it,
man.
That it's not his brother and it's not his girlfriend, and it's somebody that that sounds like the foundation is in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like the workings of a good sitcom. It sounds like they could be a possible love interest.
Total.
Unless, I'm picturing a Sam and Diane kind of dynamic here, but
I just looked them up. It's Dewey and Deborah.
There we go.
Dewey and Deborah. You know what? Can I
take it?
Respond to this first, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
From the way that this is phrased to us, Dewey writes as though the fears that he may have are a negative thing, and they don't have to be. You can embrace the fear, Dewey. Mm-hmm. Embrace the fear. Embrace
that's
the fear, and buy it's a total t-shirt. What I mean by that is that if
cat
for
poster.
Any reason ongoing, you're in a panic, you have fears, you're nervous, you're stressed out, you're only going to succeed. That's always, always a good sign.
If you didn't care, you'd flop.
If you didn't care, if you didn't give two shits, if there were no fears, then he wouldn't even taken the time to write this in as a question. I think these are awesome signs. Don't try to work against the fear and try to rid it in order to initiate your business with this guy or female or whoever it is. Take it by the horns and know that that's how you're going to accomplish things.
Yeah. Don't, I would say, don't do it half-ass. You go 1,000% with this thing. It sounds like his decision's there. I love that you found someone that is great. I know a few great examples of people who did it in pairs rather than solo. And I always envied them because they had an equal from the very beginning. And I find now with the way it is with business, I'm only bringing in people to be, I would love to have an equal that would be that just as powerful to kind of bring them on board now, but that's tough. So if you're doing it from the beginning,
from the
I think that's a great advantage. And you guys can craft and mold the business you want. I would say this, kind of piggybacking off of what you said, Mikkel, those fears and everything. When those happen, you're going to find your own way to kind of obviously get over those when you're in your business. I think we can give you tips and tricks on what to do, but some of that stuff has to be learned in your own world. Like when you get to that part about invoicing, what do you do, right? When you get to that point about finding new clients, ask around, what do you do? But for now, what you can do, at least like we've said 100 times, is save your money, get yourself ready to a point where you could take this leap, and financially maybe you're not as worried as you would if you were to do it with very little, you know? Mm-hmm. So give yourself, bet on yourself. I always say too, put that down, have something to, have resources to go to money-wise, financially-wise, so you can give this the best chance possible. Because it sounds like you're there. It sounds like you're going to do a great job and you're going to love every minute of it. That, I can tell you, is over the hurdle. But just do your best preparation now and get the word out and let everyone know you're going to do this. That'd be my goal or suggestions.
I think that the best advice I can give you is, yeah, go all the way with it. However, don't go all the way to where you're spending money on the wrong things right away. Mm-hmm. Like Nick, you just got your own kind of office space, which is great, mm-hmm. but I would never recommend starting that way.
Took 4 years. Yeah.
I think a lot of people make the mistake of going out and like, yeah, we got to get a cool office space. Keep it very lean at first. Keep it to the bare minimum, spend your money wisely. And hopefully your new partner fills in your gaps. Hopefully you guys don't do the same exact, bring the same exact skill set.
You complement each other, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, mm-hmm. like I think if I'm gonna start a new business with someone, I would want someone who's got like a great like administrative head on their shoulders, like someone who's mm-hmm. gonna do the getting
the yin
clients.
And yang kind of, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, even if you two both do the same thing, don't let that stop you. Just figure out where your, where your weaknesses are, so you can
and be honest with it. Be honest with that too. Yeah. If someone is stronger in one area, lead that. If someone's stronger in the other area, let that person lead that thing. I think that is just a good harmony of what you want to do. But I think bring up a great point. Take advantage of the fact that design studios, very successful ones, are being run from homes. You don't have to have all the flash at the very beginning. Be wise about it and do it right. But when I look up some of these people and they and some of their websites, they'll brag that they have this home studio, and it's like, we got to take advantage of the fact that that's not looked down upon the way it probably was 20 years ago, where it's like, oh, you're just a home designer. We have a whole different industry now, so don't worry about that. Just do the great work and kick ass at starting it up, you know?
Absolutely. All right, cool. Well, keep sending in those listener questions to questions@thedeependesign.com. And of course, we love the audio ones. And on Twitter using #DGDC. All right, guys, where can people find you online, Mikkel?
I can be found at MKM Design Co. on Instagram and MKMDesignCo.com.
Sweet. Nicholas.
Nice. LongoDesigns.com, which will soon feature a introductory video that was just shot last week.
Yeah, it will.
Thank you very much, Wes.
Look at you.
Learning
about the video.
Took advantage of the new space to kind of say, okay, now it's time to do a video.
That's awesome. Yeah, I want to see that.
And it'll be up soon. And Longo Designs on Instagram, Longo Designs Inc. on Twitter.
Cool. You can follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell or on Facebook at facebook.com/thedeependdesign. All right. Well, with that in mind, keep designing. Catch us next time on the Deeply Graphic Design Cast.